This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am here today with a tribe called Best, Darren Best. Welcome, Bestie.
How are we?
Very well. Run NCB, Nathan Cooper Brown.
Wow, I didn't think you'd go two for two, Rob, but you did it.
There you go. And I am the notorious ROB. Rob Calder, here we go. We were just talking about late 90s to early 2000s rap music, and we'll get the plug in there while we possibly can. As a reminder to everyone else, you can subscribe to the Talking Split podcast on Apple Podcasts or via Spotify, and you can follow along with the Talking Split handle on Instagram and Twitter. Bestie's newly found on Instagram. What's the account name, Bestie?
It's private.
It's private? Yeah. Thought it might be. Hey, the reason you are back on Instagram, though, is Giddy Daniels Cup content more than anything else. How's that been going? What is it? Give us a little bit of a rundown.
First of all, that's the sole reason I got on it, to watch our comms department's little video they did of it the other day. So, yeah, reluctantly back on it, or on it for the first time, actually, for that one. But the Giddy Daniels Cup is something that we do in our boys' HP program. We combine Metro and Country for that. Obviously, the name is from two former Pathway athletes, both in the NBA, both expected to be in the Boomers, one Country, one Metro. And we also name our respective teams in that through past Victorian HP athletes as well, which is really great. It's a five-week event on Wednesday nights at Mullum Mullum. People are able to come and watch it, so if they want to come and watch it, that's fine. It will be going for four more sessions, so including tomorrow. And then for this, it's 7 till 9 p.m. Everything we do is competitive-based. It all goes towards a leaderboard to win the cup, which is a nice big cup with a plaque on it there and everything. But it reinforces our state curriculum, state style of play. So the first hour is sort of camp-based, although everything goes towards points. And then we actually have referees come in and we play games at the end. So it's really, really good for coaches and the athletes.
Yep. What sort of age groups are we talking here?
16s and bottom 18s. We do have a couple top age, long-term athletes that we've invested in.
Yep. Excellent. How's it gone so far, Coops? Like, you, what, 1 week in now? About to be week two tomorrow night, but that's Wednesday. Yeah, you get where I'm going with this.
Yeah. No, week one, really good start. Great job by the athletes and the coaches establishing the sort of effort and competitive environment and just overall feel, like, you know, pathway culture feel that, you know, it was sprint from A to B. It was international effort in everything that we did. It was engagement. It was peer-to-peer coaching. And there was a really high level of accountability. You know, some of these athletes weren't used to. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do. So we laid a really good foundation of those sorts of things. And then heading into the next weeks, we'll start building in some more teaching so that we can get that balance. And then the gameplay is fantastic, you know, where we just, you know, we get to go at each other. We get to put the guys in those you know, meaningful game environments, you know, force them to think outside the box, force them to be able to take information again in more high pressure, high accountability situations. And yeah, overall it was a really good start to Giddy Daniels Cup 2.0.
Yeah, because it ran last year as well, didn't it?
It did, yeah. Last year was outstanding. It was our, you know, pilot program. You know, we put this thing together, Darren and I, with the idea in mind of doing exactly what's happened, and we were wrapped with what we're able to do from a program perspective. But what was even better was the reaction by the athletes and how much they just loved this thing and how passionate they were and how excited they were. And I think Darren had one of his athletes, you know, comment. He's like, "Hey, I need to be back on, you know, White, obviously the Jack White team, because we won it last year, and I need to be able to, you know, defend the championship." And so when you hear the athletes, you know, talking that way, you can see what it means to them and why it's so important to our calendar.
Yep, absolutely. So Mullum Mullum Wednesday nights, what time, Bestie?
It's 7 till 9.
7 till 9. So there'll be obviously a little bit of on-court stuff before the scrimmage stuff comes in afterwards, but you'll see obviously these two guys coaching and a number of other coaches from the BV Pathways in there. So it is worth going along and having a little bit of a look for coaches that are interested in getting involved with that side of things. And it does tie in a little bit to All-State Camp. Obviously just ran on the weekend just prior down in Traralgon for the boys. How did that go, Coops? What were the big things you saw out of that?
Yeah, plenty to be excited about. you know, especially from our younger athletes, under 15s in particular, you know, really exciting group, both in country and metro in terms of talent and their habits. We had some of our state representative athletes who were there, you know, going at one another, combining. I mean, anytime we can get both programs together in one venue like that, and we're talking about the whole program, you know, most of our hub leads, you know, our network coaches, state coaches, and we're getting after it, and we're competing, and we're teaching. You just it has a feel about it, you know, and it has what we want in terms of creating something special, something that stands out from the rest of the country, and that's what Saturday had. You know, it wasn't all glitz and glam, wasn't all great. There's definitely some areas of improvement, some retention of information, some attention to detail that still needs work. But you know, it's always going to be an ongoing process, but it was nice to be back in the All-State environment. It's a good one.
Yeah, Bestie, what were the main things you saw coming out of that camp? Like, what were the main areas that you were pretty happy with, and what were the sort of some of the areas for work from here, do you think?
Well, this is the first time we've had a second All-State camp on the calendar, so this is something that after last year we said, you know, why are we not doing more of these? So this is the first time we've done the second one. Good to see that we could build on some of the stuff from the first camp. Still, I guess for us, the biggest thing that I think we need to continue to improve on is our decision making on the end of penetration. And, you know, with us, we only have them for X amount of times and then they go back into the club land environment. So it's really important to those of you that are listening, you know, please don't reward these bad shots that just go in. You know, please, or the bad shot that results in a foul being called. You know, please continue to probe with questions. What did you see? Did you see the help defense? You know, where are you looking at, you know, when you're doing this? Because as we know, and I know we're going to talk about 16 Nationals shortly, but the level of physicality at the 16 Nationals was way up, which is what we have been asking for at a HP, as a HP cohort. And the biggest thing, that wasn't rewarded at 16 Nationals. And Coop's about to go into Asia Cup. It's not going to be rewarded there. So we've still got one more hurdle to jump in an environment where that's rewarded, because it definitely isn't rewarded with us at Giddy Daniels Cup either. So that end of penetration decision-making is what needs to continue to improve. And it's evolving because they're so young.
Yep, that makes sense. So we spoke about 16 Nationals, or you alluded to that already. Metro came away with the gold. Don Lanossi, the head coach there. Thoughts on that group over the course of the week, or even over the course of the build-up, I suppose?
Yeah, look, honestly, first of all, I have to say Dom and his staff did a great job, like really good job. There's, you know, it's not a secret that 08 group, which is a top age 16s, missed a lot of basketball through COVID in, you know, what we consider some of the formative years in under 14s. And they went to East Coast Challenge in January and weren't very good. You know, that was the truth. Traditionally, Metro would go there and probably not even drop a game. But we had a couple of big losses, you know, 20-point losses. And we picked four athletes that make the state team that weren't at East Coast Challenge. We had three bottom ages, and East Coast Challenge for us is a top age athlete-only program in 16s. And then we had another athlete, you know, I'll give him a shout-out, Sam Martin, you know, just come into our non-SDP trial to trial with SDP, to make SDP, and then make him eligible for the state team. And he just grabbed that thing by the horns, and I see a bright future for him. He's very, very coachable, and really good, you know, exciting, you know, 112 points in the final.
It's a lot of points. You know? Like, there's a lot of points.
Yeah, so, you know, this is, you know, I can probably, I'll brag a little bit now, but, you know, this is the third Nationals in the row that we've been the best perimeter shooting team there from Vic Metro standpoint. And then except for that, you know, coming right into that gold medal game, we had the best defense as well. But what I will say, and you know, once again, if you look at our pool, we didn't play some of those lower ranked teams. So had we played them, we probably would have held some of them below 50. You know, our full court defense was intimidating, I would say that. So really pleased with them. The challenge is now is for that group to be able to continue on that path of improvement and try and get it done again in 18s. And then individually, obviously, try to move on to long-term stuff. And we feel we had a nice mix of some athletes that could help us right now with the possibility of becoming something in the future, but we also had some clear long-term athletes that are exciting.
Yeah. Go off on a little bit of a tangent here. How important, we talk about long-term athletes a lot, I suppose, in basketball, and making sure that they have opportunities down the road. They get picked for various things because we think they will be a player, under-18s, senior basketball, those types of things. How do you balance out picking for the short-term versus the long-term? Because we do still need some short-term kids to keep others in various positions so that it lines up well. Where's the line, I suppose? Because we can't take all long-term, we can't take all short-term. How do you find the balance between the two, Coops? What's your experience been?
A lot of trial and error. It's interesting you bring that up because it's something that's been really poignant for our program the last couple of nationals, under-18s in particular, in Ballarat, you know, two tournaments ago. We took all LTAG kids. We made a conscious decision to do that. We looked around and we said, okay, well, we're going to take, you know, three. I think we had four kids, 6'8 or bigger, which in country Victoria is pretty rare. And the thought of leaving guys at home, you know, it was really hard to wrap our head around. We didn't realize the impact that it was going to have on our results, because we did feel like we probably should have finished a little bit higher. And picking the LTAD kid over the hungry country Vic, put my body on the line kid, was a big part of our evaluation process. And so this next time around, you know, obviously up in Brisbane this year, we had an injury. Unfortunately, our 7-footer, and again, pretty rare in country Vic, you know, went out, and we had the choice over a number of athletes and who to bring in. And we chose Lockie Harvey. And the reason we chose him was because he was going to be the 10th guy, so we needed him to be an unbelievable culture person. He was an elite defender, tough as nails, like bleeds country Vic. But if you're looking at him and you know and you saw the way he plays, like, you wouldn't say that he is a prototypical long-term athlete. Now, he's going to argue against that and work his tail off to achieve his dreams, which is a credit to him, but that's just what we're talking about from an optics standpoint. And at the end of the day, he was a huge reason why that team won a silver medal. You know, he went from an injury replacement to starting in the gold medal game, which is, again, is a credit to him. And also the ongoing conversation, evaluation, trial and error, consideration that we'll need to keep making, especially on the countryside, because obviously a little bit different to Metro, on the balance of long-term versus short-term, toughness versus maybe lack of toughness in a kid that might be a little bit big and longer, you know, and not comfortable in their body yet. And then the other part of that too is the Nationals is now going to extend to 12 athletes. So finally we'll align with the rest of FIBA, and for future, you know, national championships, we're now able to select 12 athletes going forward. So that'll also impact, again, what you're talking about, ripe versus green.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, Bethy, you obviously see it a lot, just sheer weight of numbers in the Metro Melbourne area. How do you go about picking the right short-term person for those types of roles? Because, again, you can't have all of them, but how do you find the right one to fit into those teams?
So state teams, you know, obviously we want to go away and perform. We're very comfortable with some of our long-term athletes potentially missing a state team and continuing along our pathway and then maybe making it later, you know. And we've seen that happen multiple times. You know, we've had some kids' recent history that perhaps weren't right there when it came the time for their state team selection, but have ended up at the COE a couple of years later, or college, or whatever. So we've all heard those stories. Is it great to go to a Nationals? Yes. Is it valued? Definitely. But I say this all the time. If you just love the game, keep working on it, you'll continually get better. But the way we pick it is, what does the team need? You know, what does the team need? So if we feel we've ticked some enough boxes, you know, maybe we don't need that right now, kid. But if we feel we need it, we go and get that. And, you know, like Coop said before, talent identification is much harder than talent selection, right? Talent selection, picking, you know, right now who's going to be able to perform in a month's time, you know, that's somewhat easier than talent identification, because there's so many factors and so many things that change throughout the course of someone's developmental journey. including maturity. You know, a lot of people, they find their time when they realize what they can or can't be, or they find their time where they start to really play hard or whatever it is. And it's different for everyone. You know, I love the analogy of you're cooking popcorn. Stay with me. You're looking popcorn. It's all in the same environment. I'm sure you've heard this before. Not all the kernels pop, right? Some pop later, some pop early, you know, and that's, I really like it. I think it's true to individual development. So we just go based on what the team needs. How does the 11th and 12th pick come into play for this cycle going forward? We'll see. We'll see.
Yep. I mean, I'd anticipate a few people will probably take some chances with bottom age kids in those last couple of spots, which is fine. But we've also seen over the years that there are kids potentially that are ready as bottom ages that maybe regress a little bit by the time they get to a top age spot. So it is a difficult spot to be in now that if you're going to, I'm not going to say give, but if a bottom age kid earns a spot, will they continue to do the work so that they can be selected top age as well? Because some will go backwards in that space. I mean, it's interesting. You spoke about it, Bestie, that, you know, we've all heard the stories about, oh, they missed out here and then they made it later on and, you know, clearly the coaches screwed that up. Well, it's not necessarily the case if the coaches screwed that up. Maybe they weren't ready at that time. They've gone away and they've done some work. Like I remember a parent in one of my state teams, we picked the child. I was talking to the parent afterwards and they're like, oh, we were kind of hoping you wouldn't pick them. Like we kind of feel like they need a little bit of a kick in the ass, and missing out on 16s would have been that kick in the ass for them. It's like, yeah, sorry. Like we kind of needed them. Like we didn't have much of a choice on this one. But one of the very few times that a parent has said, I don't want you to pick my child. But it's certainly something about it is that it's not necessarily everything has to line up to make a team at the right time to be in that right situation. You've got to be healthy, injury-free, skill set's got to work, the balance of the rest of the team's got to work. So many things have to go right to even make a team. The success stories, you know, very easy. It's the Monday morning quarterback stuff. Like, very easy to call it after it's hit as to whether that was good or whether that was bad. And, I mean, that's the job of coaches, though. Like, that's why people are in these types of positions, because it is hard to do, and you can only get better at this with more experience. All the information tells us the later you can leave talent ID and selection, the more likely you are to be accurate with it. And, you know, we're in that position, obviously, where we have to make decisions on kids and coaches, for that matter, which is what we're going to go into shortly. But it's not an easy thing to do. So until you're in those positions and until you've been to one, like I always got told when I was coming through the state stuff for the first time, you can't pick a team for nationals until you've been to a nationals. And you'll see why those kids that you thought would make good nationals teams players won't translate. Like the good Friday night player doesn't always equal the good nationals player.
Oh, definitely. And I would even say it's the same for people that haven't gone recently.
Yep.
You know, I've had conversations with some people that have been in it recently. Oh, sorry, that have been in it previously. Say, oh, this kid will be... Hang on a minute. Have you been to the last two? You know, the game's evolving. We just had a HP meeting this morning and the pace of play on the boys' side, 16s, was way up than what it had been previously, obviously, with, you know, the scoring that it was. But, yeah, and, you know, this is the amazing thing about our sport. There's multiple ways.
I think the other part to remember, too, is we are probably... some of the furthest behind in addressing the mental side of the game through selection process, through talent identification. And it's something that our friends in soccer and in other sports overseas now, granted, a lot more time, a lot more resources, a lot more money, all those sorts of things. But the fact that we aren't doing anything in that space is going to impact our selections until we do. So that's something that I know we try and speak about and have been speaking about for a long time, and trying to figure out what ways we can start bringing that into the process to help understand. And we were talking about mental skills. It might be something as simple as, you know, who wants to do the work? Who's showing the characteristics to really invest in getting better? You know, that has some resiliency, that loves the game to a certain level, that's going to buy into practice, is going to buy into doing the extra work, knowing that that's obviously going to translate later on. And I think probably something too that's important for our audience and our community to remember is that it's really hard to play 11 and 12. So, you know, we may pick 11 and 12, and how much they play at a nationals is going to be potentially minimal. So that's just something that us as HP, our directors of coaching, our coaches, state coaches, are going to have to be conscious of in nurturing those athletes and the benefits of being at a Nationals versus going there and not playing.
Yep. It was a great tweet by Wayne Goldsmith during the week, who's at Wayne Gold Coach on Twitter, talking about exactly that, talent ID and in the Russian space, effectively going way back. I won't read out the entire tweet, but it was on the 23rd of July. If anyone wants to go and have a look at it, we'll retweet it from the Talking Split account as well. Just effectively talking about, yes, mass talent ID can work if you have the numbers to do all that sort of stuff and you have the resources to plunge into it, but you're better off trying to get your players to fall in love with the game and do the work rather than trying to talent ID them too early when, you know, who knows how much stuff can go right or wrong with them in that space. So anyone that's looking for more conversations on talent ID, let us know and we'll dedicate an entire podcast to it, but strap in because it might be 4 hours by the time we get to the other end of it. But what we are actually here to talk about is coaching application. So we have hit that time of year where we've got, what, five-ish rounds to go, I think, of VC and VJBL in this world. And obviously teams and associations are starting to look to appoint coaches for next year. Senior programs are coming to an end. So they're looking to move in that direction as well, where they're looking to appoint coaches or reappoint coaches, as the case might be. What does it look like, effectively? And this is a really difficult spot, I think, for a lot of coaches to be in, is trying to work out what's next for them, especially while they're still in the chair of another team, is where do they go to next? So, I mean, for the average coach out there, how would you even work out what you want to coach? Like, what are some of the things, Bestie, for you that would come into the equation of how do you work out what you want to coach, whether it be junior, senior, old junior, young junior, development teams, winning teams? What are some of the things that you consider?
Your availability is the first one. Don't commit to something that you can't do, or at least that you can't do to a level that's going to be acceptable by the program or level that you're going to. So distance is also a big one. I know, Coops, you know, you've told me your story many times driving to Diamond Valley from, you know, like Sandringham, basically. You know, that it has a toll. And I have this same conversation with our athletes too when they talk to me about other clubs. I'm like, wow, that's going to add up. So you're never going to be able to give your best version of yourself or fully invest into it or even improve if you don't have the available time. So when you start to think about that, what is required? If you want to stay at your current club, you would obviously have some sort of idea of when and where practices are, those types of things. But that's probably the biggest one for me, your availability.
Yep. What about you, Coops? Any different?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've had a couple of coaches reach out to me in the last week or so who are in similar spots. One's kind of in limbo, one's already at a club. And yeah, for me, it was about going straight back to them and offering up some questions that would help them go through a bit of a, you know, that evaluation piece. And exactly what Bestie just spoke about, that was on there. You know, how far are you willing to go? What are you willing to give? You know, what level do they see themselves coaching? You know, one, what are they excited about? What's going to give them a certain level of challenge? You know, I asked about, you know, are there some coaches or coaching directors that they're keen to work with? Are there some people out there that also get them excited about basketball? You know, are they looking to do seniors as well as juniors? And that obviously ties back into the time piece. So I think it's really important. And I know I talk about time blue in the face all the time about self-awareness. And, you know, awareness is one of my personal values. And I think you need to be, you need to have elite awareness to be an elite person or elite basketball player. And so going through that evaluation process, that self-reflection of, okay, well, what am I trying to get out of this? Why do I want to do it? What are my parameters should really be the first stepping stone.
Yep, and that is a difficult conversation to have with yourself, I feel like, at times too, because the self-awareness to actually put it down on paper, for example, and say, well, actually, I want to be the head coach of the Boomers in 25 years' time. Okay, well, that bottom age under 12 team probably isn't going to get it done for this year to put you on the right pathway in like a VJBL space. Like, for me, I'd give me bottom age under 12s over anything else. Like, that's where the fun stuff is, that, like, you can educate them on your bad taste in music and those types of things, as well as start teaching some footwork things and all the things that we probably sit there and say, hey, this, we don't really feel like this is getting taught at a younger level. And so for me, I would take bottom age 12s over anything else. Now, to do that though, I've got to sacrifice the itch of, one, trying to win games, which I think as coaches we all like to try and do at times, but two, the tactical side of things, because you're really not going to get it in 12s. So how important is it, I suppose, for both of you? Because you're not too far off going through state application. How important is it to you to have seen a coach that has done some work tactically, but also from a developmental perspective, Coops?
Has to be both. Need experience, need demonstration in both those sides of coaching. You know, it's not just about going to the tournament and winning. There is a whole campaign around a nationals that needs to be nurtured. You know, it starts with, do you understand how to put a periodization schedule or table together? Do you understand how to implement a curriculum, a style of play, a system of play from week one to week eight? How do you how do you build a playbook and then adjust a playbook based on strengths? And then, you know, how can you tweak that as you go? How, whilst managing, developing a team for tournament play, which is obviously not something that a lot of our coaches are familiar with because of the VJBL season, you know, that's something different. So that's that development part. You know, can you create a culture calendar that also aligns with building a culture maybe in a shorter period of time that also has to marry up with building a team? And then, of course, as you said, Rob, is okay, well, now I've got to understand I'm in a quarterfinal. I'm facing a 2-2-1 press, you know, all game long. You know, how do I stop turning the ball over? How do I, you know, execute, you know, boomer, or how do I utilize some counters, you know, to make sure that I can nullify that press and go on and win a crucial quarterfinal? So it has to be a kind of a rich tapestry of all those things.
And you were in this space, basically, where you had to appoint coaches, obviously, from an association perspective. Did you have certain coaches that you felt like this guy or girl is an under-12s or under-14s coach, but they would struggle at 16s or 18s, and vice versa?
Definitely. Definitely.
So how would you deal with them if they came to you and said, I want to coach 16s or 18s?
Well, I had a depth chart, and yep. I told them all that I kept a depth chart, and I would check in with them throughout the year around strengths and weaknesses. But I think, going back a little bit, and I've said this when I was delivering one of your coaching courses, Rob, was, do you actually know what the club wants from you, from each team? Would you ever take a job without knowing what your expectations are? And unfortunately, we do that a lot in coaching. So I think if you are someone that, you know, like you've just mentioned, Rob, really likes the player development side of it, and what is the desired outcomes for a or bottom age team, or, you know, your fives or your threes or whatever it might be. You know, what is the outcome of a ones? You know, I felt when I was in charge of that, all of my coaches knew what was expected of them when they were, you know, when we were giving them a certain team. And some of those coaches that were toiling away in the lower teams, their level of success for us wasn't wins and losses, it was how many kids jumped up into like a twos or ones or something the following year, their top age year. And I would make that very clear to them. So that, and some coaches, to be honest, had a really good knack at that. And when time came, eventually move them up, and maybe it wasn't for them. You know, they were really good at that, you know, build them up sort of phase, but couldn't then win the big games. So yeah, definitely we would have those conversations. I would often talk with the coaches around what did they want out of their coaching and how could we help that? You know, how could we put a plan together for them to do that? But, you know, I feel like I'm just going round and round because a lot of associations don't employ full-time DOCs yet, and they don't have the resources and time to do all of that.
Yeah, it's. Did you have any rules in place around how long one coach could coach a team for? Like, did you have any, like, you can have 3 years with a first team for argument's sake, then we want to move you somewhere else and give another coach an opportunity? Or were you always just best candidate for the job and you can stay there for 35 years if you were good enough, if you were the right coach for it?
Ones and twos were, like I've said before, were the performance-based teams. They were the ones that we would want to win. So we would have that typically sort of based on the best person for the job. The only time that we would potentially look at changing that was if, say, someone was coming towards the end of their coaching career and somebody had said, you know, or maybe they had a change in family circumstance coming up where they say, you know, I'm recently married, I'm going to try and have a family, or maybe, you know, I'm retiring now and I want to spend some more time with my grandkids, and maybe we come up with that sort of plan of, okay, then I've got this other coach that I think would be great to eventually be a ones. Would you maybe do the two so you can practice together and that type of stuff? But that all, once again, comes, that only works if you have a certain culture in your club, club-wide curriculum, and everyone in the club feeling that they're all pulling for the one thing, not just my team, yeah. You know. And that shows come trials. You know, look, I've been at trials where, you know, you walk down to like court team three or four and you're like, man, that kid's really good. He needs to be on another court. But the coach hasn't wanted to promote him because they want him for their team. You know, so if you can get all that stuff out and everyone's pulling for one, that's how you achieve all that.
And difficult to do.
Very.
To be fair. Like, it's, you know, it's not that everyone has agendas, but everyone has their own pathway to go down as well. And they have their own time frames as to when they want to get there. And that's the difficult part is there's probably this little bit of a mindset, I think, with a, I'm just going to smash an entire age group here, but we'll say the younger coaches, for lack of a better term, that are in a real hurry to get somewhere. And it's like, I have to be coaching a ones. I have to be coaching a ones. Like, I need a first team now. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to get my next job after that. And it's like, well, hold on. We don't even know if you're going to be good at that one yet. Like, it's, and hard part is, I suppose, being noticed. And that's, you know, I think a lot of the younger coaches, you walk past their court and all of a sudden it's chest out and, you know, I have to over-instruct things and I need to make it shown like I'm really coaching this. And it's like, well, reality is we can see you coach for 5 minutes and we'll have an idea on what you're like, but it's really over the course of a season that we'll actually understand if you are a good coach, if you're a struggling coach, if you have weaknesses in your game, those types of things as well. Because it's not that easy to do. And in remembering, there's a lot of pressure that comes with first teams. Like, I mean, Coops, you coached a lot of first teams over the years. Like, you understand that better than most. And you were experienced when you were doing it, but it's still hard.
Yeah.
Like, it's not easy to get done. So you've then got to manage other people. Like, you might be a first team coach, but now you've got to manage the twos, threes, fours, fives, and sixes potentially in your program. Just be careful what you wish for, I think, in one of those types of roles too. So it's not easy to do. Do you see coaches, Coops, that aren't necessarily coaching first teams, but you see them and it's like, actually, they're a really good coach despite the level they're coaching at?
Yeah, 100%. I was just thinking about it, and I'm seeing the same, if not more, in a like an SDP camp environment as I am on a Friday night. You know, watching a coach on a Friday night joystick coach and use the whiteboard and, you know, try to make the team a reflection of themselves, it's like, that's just another reason why I've watched two VJBL games in the past 5 years. It's like in an SDP camp environment, I want to see when you are going to stop the action and when you're going to be a flyby coach. What sort of ability do you have to sit back and evaluate? And when you only have the time to make the point about one thing that you've identified, what was the most important thing to then be able to talk to the athletes about, or potentially the other coach at your basket? You know, what sort of relationships are you able to create with the kids at your basket in a really short period of time, knowing that those relationships are going to be important for you if you wanted to come on board, you know, in the campaign. So I'm always evaluating coaches, and I like to and I feel like I'm getting more out of it when I'm in those sorts of environments rather than just, you know, another Friday night game.
Saying this very proudly, but hopefully not being cocky, I feel right now the Metro Boys program is the best in the country. We're the current champion in everything, right? Metro Boys. We have multiple network coaches that have played key parts in our SCC, FDP CMC, SDP All-State Camp, some that are attending Giddy Daniels Cup, all of that. They don't coach first teams, right? They're there, they're athlete first, they're development focused, and they're helping build our program. It's not my program. It's our program. Everyone that's in it, it's our program. And they're helping doing that. So do I value those coaches? Absolutely. Some of those coaches might be coaching a twos, threes, or fours team, but I know, hey, man, I need you in the jamboree because you're going to reiterate what we want to reiterate. You're great with the kids. You instill passion and all that type of stuff. Great. Now, is the hope that they then slowly move up the ladder? Of course, definitely. Now, they also don't get to come in and be on a state team staff straight away, right? But it's a melting pot of all of that stuff. So I see a lot of coaches that are doing a twos or threes or whatever it is. And, you know, with our stuff, when we have our trials, we go by year born. So quite a lot of our camps are bottom age camps, you know, well, 50% of them obviously are bottom age camps. So you can see what team they're in and you can see those kids like, yeah, that coach is doing a good job with them.
That makes a massive difference. I think it's that whole thing about not rushing and just being present with where you're at. Like, just coach the kids in front of you. You don't worry about what the team number is. Like, you can get out just as much coaching a twos or threes as you can a first. Like, and in all honesty, like I say this having just coached in VJBL last season, I would have had less than 2% of an impact tactically on what that team was doing every Friday night. There is only so much you as a coach can... You might see the action and go, okay, we could just probably guard it this way. But if you don't have the tools in the toolbox, don't worry about it. It's not going to change anything. So the reality is you're kind of hamstrung to a degree about what you can actually do with your athletes to move a game from a junior sense. From a senior sense, I think you can do a little bit more there. Like they're a little bit more experienced. But from a junior sense, you don't really get that much of an opportunity tactically to change things. So it's really all about, can you develop the players? Can you make it enjoyable for them? And you know, are they a good team? Like collectively, like that's what you really want to see at the end of it. Like if you're a good communicator, it doesn't matter if you're coaching a first team or a seventh team, you will be a good communicator all the way through. And that's the challenge, I think, for coaches in the whole space as well. And as coaches, don't be scared to go and have a conversation with your director of coaching or your high performance coach or your coaching coordinator or whoever it is. Can I get some feedback? Where do you see me going? What do you think I should be doing differently? Where can I improve? Those types of things. So that when you're coming up to apply for a team, you got a little bit of a rough idea as to what you're going into as well. If you've got feedback all year that, hey, you're a little bit too cutthroat with this under-12s team, maybe the message is don't coach under-12s. Maybe the message is I might need to go to under-16s or under-18s or something like that where I could be a little bit better balanced. And it's not easy to do. And it's certainly not easy for people to hear. And I know this time of year as well, there are a number of coaches that start looking around other clubs because they're either not happy where they're at, they've shifted, those types of things as well. Be very careful out there, coaches, because shockingly, the directors of coaching talk. And if you've been speaking to one club, you've probably worked out that those coaches will talk. They'll know you've been speaking to four clubs and you're trying to play one off against the other with, oh, but this team or this association is going to give me this team. And, you know, what can you offer? Can you give me more? Like, can you give me a pizza voucher on a Friday night after my game? Those types of things. You've got to be really careful too, because you can burn some bridges really quickly. Like, I know one coach, or coaching director, sorry, that's already said no. It's a good coach because they've worked out, they've been played off against each other.
Yeah, well, and it's, to be honest, it's the same for players.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just so you know, when back in the day when there was that whole like permission to train request and they asked for three or four clubs, I would just put everyone in an email together. It's just a reality. Yeah. I'm not going to send out four separate emails to clubs, just put them all together. Yep. It's just the way it was.
But that's how it is. Like, and you've got to be really careful about it too. So there's nothing wrong with changing clubs because, you know, you might move, there might be the family situation that takes. Like, there's no issue with that whatsoever.
Yep.
But as you said, one, be on the same page, like know what you're in for, but play it the right way as well. You do have to be a little bit more savvy about that than trying to, you know, just play off for the, it's not a bidding auction. Like that's, I don't think any coach out there is in that position where they should be trying to get a bid. The one question I got asked during the week, and it is a really interesting one, can you apply for a role that somebody is already sitting in? And if so, how do you go about doing that? Like, what are your thoughts of this one, Coops?
I think you can have the conversation around that being a position or destination you'd like to end up in, you know, for... again, you know, the reasons that you spoke about, Rob, you know, you've done some self-reflection in games, you're writing down notes, you're seeing things that you would like to be able to impact in game, but maybe the level that you're coaching at is not allowing you to do that. So you can take those notes to your DOC or your mentor and say, hey, look, these are some things I've identified. I'd really like to end up as the under-18 boys first coach, you know, knowing well that somebody's already in that role. You know, is there a plan, you know, that we could discuss around me maybe ending up there one day soon? You know, so I think it's okay to be ambitious. I think it's okay to be goal driven. I think it's okay to narrow in on the things that you want, but there's definitely some integrity. There's some understanding, again, awareness about, you know, how you're going about it and what the time frame is going to be. You know, it's not likely that a DOC is just going to say, oh, yeah, great. Yeah, but I'll just go sack that guy and you know, and you take over. So, yeah, if you're going about it tactfully, I think there's some wiggle room there.
Yep. Was that a conversation you'd have openly, Bestie? Like, hey, we don't, like, I know you alluded to it before that, hey, maybe your circumstances have changed. We may look to bring another coach in. Is that something you had openly with them, or did you sort of have just a plan in place in the background?
Well, I think everyone's applying for jobs that somebody is in right now, you know, because everyone's currently coaching a team. So everyone's in that position. You should probably ask the association, do you have a plan around that person? You know, is that something that you want to do? I know for me, I would, you know, I would be already having a lot of conversations with coaches I wanted to bring back.
Yep.
So some of those positions would be locked in. And then if I had that call, because I would get those calls every year, I'd say, oh, mate, we're sorted for that position already.
Yep. I don't think there's anything wrong with applying for it.
No.
But I would be open about it too. Like if you know that, if you have a touch point with that coach.
Well, that's
and
the
say,
thing.
Hey,
yeah.
Look, just a heads up. I'd like to take that role. I'm not trying to knife you. I just want transparency in this. I want to let you know that I will be applying for that role in particular. It's just a heads up. And then that coach can do what they want with it. If they sit there and say, well, actually, I don't agree with you applying for that role, well, okay, that's their call. But at least they're not blindsided by it too. Like, I think that's a I don't want to say a politically correct way of going about it as such, but it's just a cleaner way of having everyone on the same page.
Yeah, and I think it can always be difficult, sometimes unethical, if you are, say, an assistant coach, and then you're sort of, you know, sticking the knife
in,
the knife in a little bit,
But that's why directors of coaching exist. Like, it's their job to work out who's the best applicant for that job, and you know, if only one person applies, well, only one person gets the job. Like, you can't do anything more about that. So, if there is a job that you want, be transparent about it. Put the work in to be considered for that job, but just have a quick chat and say, look, we'll, you know, throw my hat in the ring and whatever happens, happens.
Look, Coops and I had this exact discussion at lunch. You know, obviously a lot of people come to us with, you know, possibilities for them and then also possibilities for us as well, right? So I just said, you know, to Nathan, like a lot of people have this thing that, you know, if I apply for something and it's offered to me, I have to take it. It's not the case, you know, so sometimes things change, you know, all of that stuff. So obviously you don't want to be applying for jobs at 50 clubs and then turning them all down, but you know, you want to make sure that, you know, you have a full understanding of everything.
Yeah. So as people responsible for appointing coaches, what happens, like you get into an interview, and to be fair, most first team positions I would suggest will have an interview involved. Like I don't think there are many coaches out there that are above being interviewed or at the very least a chat. And with some of the new child safe rules that are coming in, coaching interviews are going to be integral moving forward to make sure that everyone's on the right path with this sort of stuff. So what happens when the answer that you get given in an interview does not line up with the actions that you have seen from that coach previously? Like, that's a difficult spot to be in. Like, how do you navigate it? Like, do you knock it on the head there and then? Do you just sort of take it under advisement and just go, all right, cool, and move on? Like, how would you deal with that, Coops?
For me, it has a bit to do with who do I see that person as? What sort of role do I see for them in the future? What sort of a relationship do we have? So if it's someone that, you know, maybe I'm not a big believer in because of character issues or maybe I don't believe in their ability through, you know, their lack of growth mindset and so on. And they're basically what we're saying is lying. So they're saying that, you know, they do things this way, but I've seen them in whatever environment do the opposite. That one I'd probably be like, oh, okay, thanks. You know, maybe move on to the next question and you know, just kind of get out of the interview, and then that pretty much solidifies, you know, where I had them. If it was someone I was more of a believer in, and maybe it was coming from a place of nerves, or I had seen growth, or maybe I can see growth in them, then I'd probably challenge them. I'd challenge them in the interview and try to push them a little bit and see where the detachment between you know, their awareness and action is, and, you know, could we work on that together, both, you know, finding that and maybe correcting it a little bit in the interview, but importantly, correcting it going forward so they could end up, you know, potentially fulfilling their potential that I'd seen in them.
What's one question you would ask in every coaching interview, Bestie? Like something that you really want to know from that coach that they have to hit on in every interview process?
Always some sort of conflict resolution example.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of it in VJBL. And once again, when I was in charge of programs, we had set curriculum, so I wasn't too interested in what you're running because you fall in line or you are not in the line, right? So for me, it was more around that stuff. How will you get, like, give me an example of a, you know, a time when, you know, there was a certain issue. How did you resolve it? You know, what did you learn from it?
Yep.
That type of stuff. I think that's a great one.
Yep. What about you, Coops?
Yeah, for me, it would be, I want to know about their why. I want to know why they coach. I want to know, you know, what drives them, you know, when things get hard, what are they drawing upon? And I want to know what their values are. You know, what's their compass? So at the end of the day, when things get difficult, you know, what sort of person are they? You know, do their characteristics align with what we're trying to do with our program, both on and off the floor?
Yep. I think a big part of it too is I want to know when they've struggled. Like, when have they been in a really difficult spot? They haven't really known. And it sort of ties into both of you guys, to be perfectly honest. But I want to know when it's been hard for them or what they've done more than anything else. Like, yeah. if their reaction is, no, I'm out, I'm just going to walk away, well, that's okay. Like, there are times where you should walk away, to be completely fair. So that's not a problem. But if they've kind of problem solved their own way out of it and they've figured out that, okay, maybe I was partly at fault, maybe someone else was partly at fault, but here's how we navigated out the end of it. That's kind of where I want to know some stuff. Like, no one's had a perfect coaching career that has never been absolved of problems along the way, but I want to know what those problems are. Like, I don't want to know, you know, what was your happiest moment in coaching? Like, for mine, that doesn't help me in the slightest. Like, that's just, okay, it's nice to know, but you know, it doesn't really help. So if you're an applicant going to an interview, and we'll start with you on this one, Coops, I'll give you a little bit of a run-up as you hear the question. If you're someone that's about to attend an interview for a position, and we'll go state teams, like, we'll, so it's a little bit higher than the VJBL, but not quite that Oz level. What do you need to know before you're walking into that interview as the applicant? Like, what are the things that you have to be across? What are the things that you need to bring with you? How would you present? What would you do in that space before walking in there?
So we ask each coach to put together a presentation, a bit about their philosophy, you know, some style of play things that they believe in, some preparation documents. We like to see some film as well, both for the fact that, one, we want to know that they can utilize the film, but one, be able to, the other, be able to present the film. So there is a presentation there that needs to be completed. So obviously that's going to be a lot of the grunt work done prior. The other part too is, you know, how much do you know about the program? You know, do you know the curriculum? Do you know the style of play? Do you know why Bestie and I have implemented that, and what are its benefits? Do you know how to tweak and use counters within that style and system if you were, you know, having to select a group that had very, you know, specific strengths? So, you know, I could go kind of on and on about, you know, those sorts of things, but the prep work is, okay, do I have really clear understanding of who I am, why I coach the game, and how I coach it? Do I have a really good understanding of the campaign? So do I know, what does the campaign look like? How am I going to prepare for it to make sure that I can minimize as many, you know, issues along the way, like I spoke about earlier, you know, periodization, culture calendar, those sorts of things. And then the other one is, you know, how much do I know about the program? How much do I know about the athletes? How much do I know about the curriculum? And how is that going to fold in the success that we expect when coaching for Victoria? You know, we have the highest expectations, and people should be reflecting that when they walk through the door.
Yep. What about you, Bestie? Any different?
Not different, just a few additions.
Yep.
Knowledge of the, if you want to be involved in a state team, knowledge of the age group is key. You know, you really need to have some knowledge of the age group. The first thing is, this isn't just for a state team, this is any interview. The first thing you need to be asking is, how many on the panel? Am I allowed to know who's on the panel? And then whatever documents or things that you are preparing, you need to make sure that there's one for each, plus some spares. Don't turn up looking like a bum. You know what I mean? Like, not everyone is, you know, a model, right? But you can iron your shirt. You can
speak for yourself, Bestie.
Right? But you can, yep, you know, like, right. you can iron your shirt. You can, look, I had a state team interview on Zoom, and I was dressed in a suit.
Yeah.
You know, and
top half only?
No, it was both.
Just in case you had to stand up?
It's correct. Yeah, I had the shoes on and everything. I had the shoes on. The belt wasn't real tight, but right, it was on. No, but this is, you know, if it matters, it shows that you mattered. Yeah, like, yeah. Get there early. You know, have you know, don't just, you know, we see this a lot too. Sometimes there's, you know, Coops and I joke about it now, but like, I carry my own HDMI cable now just because of this.
Tell me about it. Yep.
Just because of this, right? Be prepared for that type of stuff. If you're going to be presenting film, yes, you should have a new computer. You should probably upload it to a private YouTube channel as well, so it's there just in case for whatever reason something goes wrong, right? So those types of things are important.
But you got to idiot-proof it. That's the big thing. Like, yeah. It's like, I know when I go and present coaching courses now, I take two laptops, and it's purely because one time in all my years of doing this, laptop died halfway through, and I had like 2.5 hours worth of content I had to get through there that I had to make up on the spot. Able to get it done, but I also want a backup. Yeah. Like, I needed that second one just in case things go wrong. The additional plans, really like that. Have it on a thumb drive.
Yep.
Like, don't just have it. Like, if your computer dies, but someone else has a computer there that you can plug into.
100%.
Easy way to go.
Because this is what happens when you're away.
Yep.
Right. That's it. That's the point. We've been there. Oh, man. The hotel's Wi-Fi is not great. Well, you know why? There's 10 teams staying here and everyone's like ripping film down. So, like, what are you going to be able to do? You know, the printer, the reception's not going to print off. So, we're going to go and buy a printer. Like, you know, these are the types of things that happen. You know, adaptability to a schedule as well. You know, I, for this job, you know, I think I had like wouldn't have been no more than a 36-hour turnaround to present, to get film and everything ready. And, you know, I had some people, just friends that aren't in this industry say, oh, wow, that's, you know. I'm like, well, that's what it is. You know, like, you want to be in a HP environment, you got to stay up. Yep. Better get your film done, you know. So that stuff, you know, if you know who's on the panel, find out a little bit about them. Yep. You know, like, this stuff is important.
Yep.
And your preparedness shows how important it is to us.
I've got a mate of mine that owns his own business and does a lot of interviewing for his business. And one of the things he always does is he brings in like a VGA cable instead of the HDMI. Just to put the fear in the applicant as to, well, what are you going to do when you've got the wrong cable? And to be fair, he has an HDMI cable there, but he just wants to see a little bit of okay, what are you like under pressure?
Yeah.
Because interviews, you're going to be stressed walking in. It doesn't matter who you are or how long you've been doing it. There is going to be a level of anxiousness about it when you walk into the place. Just to, I don't know what they're going to ask. I don't know. I've got a rough idea on what I'm going to present on, but I don't know how it's going to be received. Like, all those types of things. So, try and get it to a point where if something goes wrong, just take a breath. Like, you'll be okay. It's when you start shuffling papers around and over-talking and things, that's when it can get really ugly.
Have you guys heard about the coffee cup?
Yeah, I have.
Thing? Like,
really cool.
Yeah, so when someone's coming for an interview, give them a quick like walkthrough, but like go through the kitchen and like make them a cup of coffee to bring into the interview. And then at the interview, see what they do with the cup. Once it's ended. So do they leave it there and just walk off?
Mm.
Or do they go and put it away? Like, those types of things. Like, that's next level now. Because if I'm ever going to be you know, I think it's good.
Just refuse to drink at the start. Yeah, you'll be okay. Right. Like, no, I'm good. I brought my own. Like,
I've been hydrating for 3 days for this. Yeah. I'm good.
But it's those types of things that are kind of the cool things about interviews too, where you can be tested a little bit. Because, I mean, what would you do, Bestie, if you got asked a question that you just had no answer for whatsoever? Where, like, would you try and make something up on the spot, or would you just say categorically, look, I don't know, can I come back to you in a few days? Like, how would you deal with it?
Yeah, so one of the classes I took in college, funnily enough, was interviewing. Yep. So the absolute worst thing you can do is try and lie. You know, I know there's all these, you know, fake it till you make it stuff. That's, you know, that's rubbish. You know, if the people that are interviewing have any sort of understanding of the industry that they're working in, you know, they'll see right through it. What you need to do is be honest, but then also tell them and show them that you have the ability to go and seek and learn information. And then very quickly, I would be providing them of an example of a time that you have done that. You know, not necessarily saying, oh yeah, but I can find that out and come back to you, because most of the time they'll say, oh, no, it's all right, don't worry about it. You know, so I think you've definitely got to be honest, don't lie. It can be found out very easily. I would think, yeah.
to be honest, not too long ago, I had a coaching course and it was an association level course. So we usually in that, we give them an offense that they've never seen before. And it's like, well, okay, work it out. How would you guard it? Those types of things. And it was one of the times where I actually forgot to print out the pieces of paper. So I just told them what the offenses were and those types of things. And there was an action in there. And I think it, from memory, I think it was an Iverson cut. And none of the three coaches in the group knew what it was. Like, they'd seen it before, but they didn't know it was called an Iverson cut. So rather than ask the question, because their fear was, I don't want to ask the question because Rob's going to think I'm an idiot. It's like, well, not the case. Like, I just for the record, I don't ever think anyone coming to a course is an idiot. Like, credit to you for turning up in the first place and trying to get better. But their thing was, well, we're going to jump on YouTube and we're just going to YouTube it straight away. And it's like, well, okay, you found a way. Now, was there a simpler way? Yes, you could have just asked. But by the same token, they got to a point where it's like, well, okay, we don't know. So we're not going to try and make something up and just do it. Like, we're actually going to go and find out the information. I think that's 90% of the battle.
Yep.
Like, just be honest with it.
I'd be more impressed with that as an interviewer.
Yep.
If somebody just said, can you clarify or can you, you know.
Yep. You ever been in that situation, Coops, where you've been asked something you're not entirely sure of?
Ever in your life?
Yeah. Like right now? Like,
I can't place it in an interview. Yep. Yeah, definitely in life. Definitely in life, I've had lots of moments as a teacher, as a coach, and just said, hey, great question. I'm not sure. Can, you know, how about we go and research it together, or can you please give me some time to go and research and I'll come back to you. So again, it's just that, you know, a little bit of humility, you know, a little bit of growth mindset and again, just proving that you're willing to learn and you're willing to be honest with people.
I feel like I'm going to potentially poke the hornet's nest on this one, but I'll ask the question either way. What is the best way to ask for feedback if it hasn't gone your way?
Give it time.
It's not 15 minutes later.
It's not 15 minutes later. Yeah, it's not. And because it's just, this is the thing, we've said it with athletes too. Like, so there's been times where an athlete's come to me like right as the session's finished and they're like, oh, okay, I've got some feedback. And I tell them now, if I've got something, I do. But otherwise, I'm just going to be giving you just generic rubbish. It's like, no, sorry, I don't right now. Give me a second. Like, give me some time. I'll come back to you on that. Because particularly with our state teams, things move quick, right? So once we, quite often we have, to be honest, we have more people apply to be head coach than assistant coaches. And quite often assistant coaches are people that have interviewed for head coaches. So by the time we decide on our head coach, like obviously we have our panel, you know, that then has to go get ratified. Once we do that, we have the conversation with the head coach and then it's like, right, these are some potential assistant coaches. How do you feel about that? So then we have a conversation with, more often than not, someone that's been unsuccessful as a head coach. Would you accept being an assistant coach? So while all of this is going on, our focus isn't on giving the unsuccessful candidates any sort of constructive, I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's not where our mind is right now. Our mind is like trying to get our staff together and then move on. So you need to give, like, you need to give it some time. Otherwise, you're just going to get brushed off and you could potentially be seen as annoying.
Yeah. Yep, agreed. I couldn't agree more. You got to give it time. You got to give everyone a chance to breathe and a chance to just digest everything. And then the other part, like with the athletes, and it happened to me on Saturday at Allstate Camp. You know, I'm shaking hands and, you know, parents are coming up and it's, you know, like we've been done for 5 minutes and I've got a row of athletes like lined up all ready to come and ask me.
You created this though, Coops. You've created this. You've been telling kids for years, ask the question, journal, like this is on you.
Didn't bring your, like your page of stickers? Open up your page.
Good job.
Well, my first answer is always, and I do this deliberately because it's a self-awareness building exercise, I'll ask them straight away, what do you think you need to work on? What do you think you did well today? So
that's not because it buys you some time to think.
Well, yeah, I mean, it doesn't hurt. But at the end of the day, like they need that skill. They need to have gone through the process of reflecting on the day and thinking about it. And then I would say the same thing to a coach, even coming off an interview, is don't just write an email saying, I want feedback, or pick up the phone and say, I want feedback. Come to us with at least one, maybe two dot points. Oh, I thought I did well in A, but on reflection, part B probably could have been better. Did you see the same thing, or am I what? You know what I mean? Like, yep. you can generate a dialogue by showing that you are genuinely interested in the feedback, and it's part of your own self-reflection process. And then I know me personally, I'm sure, you know, Best is the same, is I'm going to be way more inclined to engage and help, because it's not just the generic question again.
Which most of the time the generic question is just, I'm complaining.
Yeah.
And for any athletes out there, if you're unsure of Coop's feedback, it's just more threes.
Yeah.
Just more threes and quicker.
It's coming from the guy that put up 112 in a gold medal game recently.
Get it done.
Well, I'm just saying, Country Vic athletes, if you don't know that already, I'm very disappointed in myself.
That's your feedback. Put it in your journal.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. How you ask for it is the important matter. And I completely agree. Time is a big thing. The self-reflection stuff at the same time. Don't come in hot is the biggest thing. Like, don't come in angry straight away. Why didn't I get the job? That is absolutely the easiest way to never getting that job in the future. But if you come in with a little disappointed I didn't get it, similar to what you're saying, Coops, here's where I thought I was pretty sharp. Here's where I thought I may have struggled. Do you have any additional feedback that can help me potentially be successful in the future? Yeah. Don't compare, why did that person get the job and I didn't get the job? Because that's not fair. You don't know their experiences. You don't know whether they just interviewed incredibly well. You don't know, like, in that space. So you do have to be really mindful of that.
The other part too, I'm just channeling my inner Zoe here, because I reckon if I didn't say that, she'd get pretty upset, is that just because you get feedback and you go away and tick all the boxes of the feedback doesn't guarantee you the job next time around.
Definitely.
Yeah. There's so many moving parts to this thing that we're all discussing today. And I got one coach in particular. I said, you need to go away and coach this particular team and be in this environment. And he did it, and he came back and didn't give him the job. And, he was pretty ticked off. And we had better applicants at the time. It's just was the situation. And then, another year later, when he ended up getting the job and went through a nationals and was a little bit deer in headlights, I was like, whoa. He actually came back to me and was like, oh, I get it now.
Yep.
I see what you were trying to do. And so we're always trying to do what's best for coaches and best what's for our athletes. So I think not coming in hot and understanding that the broader landscape is a big part of it.
I'm not sure if you remember, Coops, but you actually sat on an interview panel of mine once for under 20s.
Yes.
Right? And
first impressions, Coops?
Well, look where he is now. So,
well, clearly good.
Yeah.
Didn't get it.
There we go.
Didn't get it. Brendan Joyce did. So, right.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe not a reflection on me necessarily. Maybe a reflection on the other applicants.
Right. So this stuff happens, clearly.
Right. But, and I think as coaches, we want to pick the best team possible. And as interviewers, you want to get the best coach possible. Like, that's the goal at the end of this whole thing, is to just get the best possible outcome.
Yeah.
I had this discussion with a coach literally last week. Someone came to me saying, who has been involved, who I think, can go down the road of one day being a head coach for us, but has definitely been involved at other levels and as assistants and stuff like that. Literally asked me, I don't necessarily want to be a career coach, how do I fit in with you guys around that? Because I'm mindful of taking up someone's potential career progression. Yeah.
That's a hell of a question.
And I'll tell you guys who it is off air, but it would make complete sense. Ripping person.
If you purchase the Talking Split podcast for $9.99 per month, we will tell you who that coach was as well.
Discount code, more threes. Right. however, I just said to him, I said, look, with state teams, and basketball as a sport, like, player focused, coach driven, administrator supported, right? So the goal for us when picking state teams is who is going to put our athletes in the best position to succeed, improve, get identified for the next level. That doesn't necessarily always have to be someone that wants to aspire to be a career coach, right? It might just be somebody that wants to coach or can coach. When the time comes that it all blends together and then that person goes on to become a career coach or whatever, that's just like the perfect outcome. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you shouldn't be a coach. And that's the conversation that I had with that person.
Well, it's the same with being an assistant. Like, there are plenty of people that are really content being assistant coaches that don't want to jump into a head coaching role. Yeah. It doesn't mean you shouldn't apply for an assistant coaching role because you don't have aspirations to it. That may change still. So still throw your hat in the ring. You might get there, do a year as an assistant, go, geez, I reckon I could head coach this. This would be a lot of fun. And all of a sudden, the narrative changes a little bit to, yeah, actually, I do want to do this. So don't exclude yourself before that point. And I'm sure you guys are the same. Just because they may not show the aptitude to be a head coach tomorrow doesn't mean they won't ever get there. Still be involved because we still need good assistants. So can you learn from them?
Yeah.
Like, I'm without speaking for you, Bestie, I would assume that your first question after I hear that Brendan Joyce has got the job is, well, where can I be involved that I can potentially learn from in this space?
Yeah, very quickly it turned to another, you know, I was offered a position in another age group. So I think the other thing too is I've had different advice when it comes to state teams. You know, like I was always of the, you know, I'll coach wherever you need me. Like, it's about the program, you know, and I think that is a good way to approach it. But also you need to be able to articulate what your preference is, I think as well.
Yeah. I think that matters. I mean, we'll talk the state team in particular. I was talking to a coach just the other day that's involved in the senior space that wants to coach 16s. I'm like, just don't do it. Like, your first point of the entire pod about time, availability, you don't have time to do seniors and 16s. Like, it clashes so much. There's so much overlap in that you'll drain yourself going from one spot to the next spot and you won't do anything well.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's be very mindful of your calendar. That does wrap us up for this week. So thank you both for jumping in. I know it's been a little bit of a hiatus over the last number of weeks. So everyone that's been emailing me, like, when's the podcast coming back? When's the podcast coming back? It's been like, you know, can we go to Witchy and Scratchy Land yet? Like, it's been that sort of thing over the last couple of weeks. So I appreciate all the support, but we are thankfully back now. So appreciate the listen once again. Thank you both for jumping in, and we will catch you on the Talking Split Pod next week. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe.